Okay, we are back on TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. I'm Peter Christian. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls, producing TalkBack this morning. And we're always privileged to have with us Dr. John Lott, Crime Prevention Research Center founder, and also of the website crimeresource.org. Crimeresearch.org. Thank you so much. All right, so good morning, Dr. Lott. How are you, sir?
Doing great. Great to talk to you again.
So tell us what's been on your plate. What kind of things are you working on right now?
Oh, geez. Well, I'm finishing up a report on looking at all the school shootings in the United States from 2000 through the end of last year. We just finished a report a little while ago on kind of looking at what groups kind of commit terrorist attacks at relatively high rates. Just had a piece in the New York Post on Friday looking at the different types of anti-fraud voting rules across different countries, basically showing that the United States is a real outlier in terms of not protecting against fraud. Those are just a few of the things we've been working on recently.
So the Post article, that's interesting because one of the things I think that this country prides itself in, at least I hope so, is having fair and, unvarnished elections.
Right. I mean, obviously the Senate has been voting on or trying to vote on the so-called SAVE Act, which would require government-issued photo IDs for people to vote and proof of citizenship. And the claim that Democrats are making is that that would primarily disenfranchise blacks and Hispanics. And so one of the things we did was to go and look to see what the rules are around the world. If you look at, for Hispanics, for example, if you look at Mexico or the South American countries or Spain, all those countries require government-issued photo IDs to be able to go and vote. All of them require that you have to provide proof of citizenship when you register to vote. Mexico's rules are, in fact, for proof of citizenship, exactly the same as what's in the SAVE Act. So it's interesting, that they're Hispanics in the rest of the world seem to be able to meet those requirements. If you look at Africa, for example, all the countries in Africa require government-issued photo IDs to be able to vote. 51 of the 54 countries in Africa require that you have to provide proof of citizenship in order to register to vote. In Europe, of the 47 countries in Europe, all 47 now require that you have to have a government-issued photo ID to be able to go and vote.
Wow.
51 of the 50, or, no, I'm sorry, it's Africa, 43 of the 47 countries require that you have to... They check your citizenship. All those countries basically have a computerized database of who is a citizen in the country, and they use that to check the registration data. France has rules that are extremely similar to what's being proposed in the SAVE Act, where you have to go and provide either a birth certificate or a passport. Or there are a couple other pieces of identification, which are also in the SAVE Act, in order to register to vote. The only three countries, the UK, Crete, and one other who's slipping my mind for a second, will go and don't require that you have to have that documentation when you register, but they will randomly... kind of ask people to prove it, and if you have to prove it, then you have to provide that information.
So what you're saying is when you go to vote, actually, now, what about me? How does this affect mail-in voting?
Well, no other country has mail-in voting. You have, and they don't have it because of fraud. I mean, most countries are, so you have different things. You have absentee voting, which you have to go and kind of request a ballot be sent to you.
Right.
And then you have mail-in voting, where they just send out the mail to everybody who's registered to go and vote. No country, as I say, has mail-in voting other than us. With regard to absentee voting, the vast majority of countries ban absentee voting for people who live in the country. If you look at Mexico, for example, they ban absentee ballots for people living in the country. Basically, South America bans it. If you look at Europe, for example, 37 of the 47 countries in Europe ban absentee voting. Eight of them, or nine of them, nine of them allow it, but they will not send you the ballots in the mail. You have to go in person and provide a government-issued photo ID before they will give you the absentee ballot. And seven of those nine countries limit it further to people who are either in the hospital at the time of the election or in the military, and they do not take your word for it. You have to get either the hospital or the military to provide certified proof that you will not be available to go and vote in person. And, you know, the thing is, a number of these countries used to have rules similar to what we have in the United States. France, for example, used to have absentee voting similar to what we have, where you can just go and request a ballot. But they discovered, basically because some people got a guilty conscience, that the mafia, primarily on the island of Corsica, but also in other places in France, was literally providing several hundred thousand kind of fraudulent votes. Wow. In each election that was there. As I say, it was not going to be discovered until a few people actually got kind of guilty consciences about it going on. You look at a country like, you know, the one thing I think is important is that in other countries, this is not a controversial issue, trying to do things to reduce vote fraud. It's something that's agreed across political parties. You know, you look at Mexico. Mexico has much stricter anti-fraud rules than a lot of countries do. They adopted them in 1991 because of lots of fraud that was occurring in the country there. And the actual rate that people voted went up dramatically in the five presidential elections prior to 1991, the average turnout for presidential elections was 59%. In the three presidential elections after that, it was 68%.
Wow.
And yet it was very difficult to register to vote. Not only did you have to have that type of documentation, but in the vast majority of states in Mexico, there's only one registrar's office. So in some states, people had to travel literally 100 miles because you had to go in person to register, and then you had to go in person to go and pick up the documents, mm-hmm. the voter ID,
Dr. Lotta,
to be able to go and vote.
Yeah, we're actually past a break. We're going to take a break. We have lots of folks waiting. No, that's okay. We appreciate that explanation. We're going to come right back, and we have Nancy. We have Rick and Emmett all standing by to talk with you, sir. And we'll be right back with Dr. John Lott right after this. Hey, welcome back to Talk Back. 721-1290 is our number. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen producing Talk Back, taking your calls. And Dr. John Lott is our featured guest this morning. Nancy has been waiting the longest to visit with you, sir. So, Nancy, go ahead.
Good morning, Dr. Lawton. That's fascinating information that you shared this morning. I was really educated as to how other countries across the world guard against voter fraud. And yes, and thank you so much for supporting and working for the SAVES Act. We have to have voter ID. We just have to. We're too huge of a country, and we have too many illegal aliens living here. But I want to focus now on Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. I heard a soundbite over the weekend by our Vice President, J.D. Vance, and, of course, he's heading a committee that's been investigating this Congresswoman for fraud, for immigration fraud, and also the Somalian fraud. They're trying to get to the bottom as to how much she knew about that. Now, J.D. Vance said they don't quite know how to go about building a case against her. They're looking at different ways and methods. If you could give advice to our vice president on Ilhan Omar, what advice would you give her? And thank you, doctor, and you have a wonderful Easter.
All right, thanks for the call. Good topic. Dr. Locke, go ahead.
Happy Easter to you, too. I have to say, I'm not a lawyer, so exactly how you revoke citizenship from somebody is a little bit above my pay grade. I mean, I can go and talk about the birthright citizenship stuff that's coming up. If people wanted to talk about that, the case before the Supreme Court, a tiny bit. But the my understanding is that even in cases where there's fraud, it can be difficult to go and remove somebody's citizenship, which I guess is one reason why they're being cautious about this so far. I know J.D. Vance said that he was talking to various legal experts about this in general. But, beyond that, I have to say when something's kind of beyond my depth.
Okay, let's try to get another call in before we take a break. Rick, you're on Talkback with Dr. Lott. Go ahead.
Hey, Dr. Lott, I'd like to talk about crime and terrorism. Worldwide, from the 1st of March to the middle of March, there were 8 synagogues that were attacked worldwide. And when are our government organizations like the UN, the Democratic Party, colleges that accept government money, when are they going to stop giving passes basically to people who want to commit crimes against Jews? It seems like crimes against Jews is no different than crimes against Christian groups, just normal everyday citizens. But like at the UN, there's a culture that the Jews have whatever is happening. They deserve what they're getting. If you watch some of the UN conversations, the Jews aren't popular. Do you think it's a cultural or a civilized or a cultural underpinning of anti-Semitism that terrorism against Jews is not real terrorism? And I'll just listen to your comments.
Well, I'll tell you what, Dr. Lott, I want to give you plenty of time to answer that very important question. And sure, we're like seconds away from a break here, and I don't want to break into your answer to that. So we'll cover that when we come right back after this quick timeout. Stay with us, please. Hey, we're back on Talkback. Dr. John Lott joining us on the phone this morning, and I had to play a commercial break there, but I know you're poised to answer the previous question, so please go ahead.
No, thanks. I mean, I actually, in February, I was in Australia. I spent a fair amount of time at Bondi Beach, actually met with the rabbi there and for the synagogue right there near the beach. He actually had his grandchildren, and his children were at the beach when the attack occurred. And I can talk about that. You're right. You're having all these attacks worldwide in March. Obviously, it's timed in part with the war in Iran. So a little earlier, we had put together data on these mass public shootings in the United States from 1998 through the end of last year to try to basically before the war got started, just to see what groups are kind of overrepresented in terms of those types of terrorist attacks. And what we found was that the one group that really, really stands out are attacks by Muslims. They're about 18.2 times their share of the population on average over that period of time in terms of attacks. And, you know, obviously there are other types of attacks like the attack at the beginning of last year in New Orleans when the guy drove his truck through the crowd downtown New Orleans there, murdering 14 people and wounding something like over 40. There's no other group that's even remotely close in terms of it. If you, you can also break it down by people of Middle Eastern descent. They're you know, overrepresented by a factor of about eight. A lot of people like the Biden administration would constantly be talking about things like attacks by white supremacists and white males. You know, the majority of attacks, about a little bit over 50%, are by whites. But white non-Middle Eastern males make up about 64% of the population. So they're actually underrepresented. You see some differences. Blacks are and Asians are actually slightly overrepresented. But, you know, you're talking about differences of like 30% or something, not, you know, 18-fold differences in terms of their share of the population. Hispanics are slightly underrepresented in compared to their share of the population. But, you know, there's definitely something going on there. I mean, you look at the big terrorist attacks in Europe. The biggest terrorist attack there was in Paris in 2015 at the concert shooting there. And that was done by Muslims. You had 130 people were murdered in that attack. So, you know, it's something that we see nationwide occurring and across the world.
Well, let's try to get one more call in before we take our top of the hour break. Emmett, you're on with Dr. Luck. Quickly, what's your question, please?
Well, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, actually, I'll just jump right into it. I was going to talk about the voter ID. I really don't agree with having to get a birth certificate. It's kind of cumbersome, but I do agree with voter ID, like your driver's license or state ID. That's important. But really, there was a disturbing thing of self-defense that I saw in the news where a woman was punished for defending her son against a bully. Now, this is opening a can of worms, but I don't think she should be prosecuted for standing up to the bully in a her son was getting bullied by a bully at school. She kidnapped the bully, took him to her home, and made him apologize to her son and threatened the bully. Don't you even do this again? And the bully ran off. Now she's getting charged with kidnapping, and she's going to lose her job just because she stood up to a bully. It's like, you know, if you stand up to a big bully, you're the one in trouble.
Emmett,
how do you feel about that?
We have 2 minutes, so go ahead, Dr. Locke, please.
Well, look, I mean, there are ways to stand up to bullies and there are ways to stand up to bullies. And I think kidnapping somebody at gunpoint is probably not the way to go about doing that. With regard to what you first started talking about, with regard to the SAVE Act, the Republicans put forward a bill during the debate that would just require the photo ID requirement, and all 47 Democrats voted against that, even though some of them had claimed that they would be willing to support that, kind of along the lines that you were just saying. You know, with regard to what type of identification you need to get registered to vote, even if you were to include that in there, and as I say, one of the bills that were voted on didn't have that. You look at it, and to get a real ID for a driver's license, you have to prove citizenship. You have to have something like your birth certificate. It's very easy to go and get a birth certificate. All the states, you can do it online. You just go and fill it out, and they'll send it to you. You pay, a small amount there. People have to have this for many different parts of life. As I say, just getting a real ID, that little star on your driver's license.
Right.
You have to be able to go and make that type of proof.
Well, I'll tell you what, Dr. Lott, we are up against our top of the hour break here, and I'm going to ask Harry to be very patient. He's been waiting for a while, and unfortunately, we have the top of the hour break coming up. But Dr. Lott's going to be with us all the way till 10 o'clock this morning. So if you have a question or a comment for Dr. John Lott with the Crime Prevention Research Center, please give us a call, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. We will get you in the queue and get you in touch with Dr. Lott in the next hour. So please. Welcome back. Hour number two underway on Talk Back this morning. I'm Peter Christian, Mr. Nick Questions, and taking your phone calls over there. Good morning again, Mr. Nick.
Good morning.
And we're always privileged to have with us Dr. John Lott with the Crime Prevention Research Center. And he's joining us on the phone. And Harry has been waiting all the way through the break, and we thank him for that. Harry, good morning. Thank you for your patience. What's your question?
Yeah, good morning, John. Yeah, I think everybody should have their ID, ID theft is probably one of the biggest problems there is. So everybody should have their DNA, fingerprints, and photograph on record, accessible to cops and everybody. That way we could kill two birds with one stone, help solve crime, and verify people's ID. But as for this SAVE Act, it's a problem, a solution looking for a problem. I mean, of course, there's always going to be some fraud, but it's like yelling, "Well, we got to stop people from eating cats and dogs." I mean, they do it, but there's so few that actually really matters. And I know exactly what this is. It's Donald Trump says he won the 2020 and was cheated, and this is the Trump cult tried to validate that claim. And this is, oh, see, he did get cheated out. I mean, so it's. It's like I say, it's a solution looking for a problem. It's not there's not enough voter fraud to really matter.
All right, Harry, thanks for the call. Dr. Lott, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I guess the question is, why do we have to have IDs for everything else in life? You want to go check into a hotel, you have to provide government-issued photo IDs to be able to do that. You want to go fly on a plane, you have to go and provide that. You want to go and buy cigarettes or buy alcohol or buy, certain types of medicine for if you have congestion. You have to provide a government-issued photo ID to be able to go and do that. Why do we apparently are concerned about fraud, about people, checking into hotels, and not being who they say they are. But we're not worried about that with regard to something like voting. The thing is also, it's not like, as I talked about before, all these other countries around the world seem to think that fraud or no frauds occurred in those countries. You look at a country like Northern Ireland, for example. In 1985, Margaret Thatcher, a conservative, passed the first voter ID requirements that were there. When Tony Blair, Labour on the left, was in charge in 2002, he made a deal about the case that they were counterfeiting the IDs that were there. And so he passed a law that created tamper-proof government-issued photo IDs to be able to go and vote. So you have both people on both sides of the political spectrum. It turns out later on, kind of after the statute of limitations were done, the Irish Republican Army basically eventually confessed to making about 10% of the votes that were occurring in Northern Ireland. They had whole armies of taxi cab drivers that would take people from one polling place to another so they could vote multiple times during the day there. And they had used fake IDs to go and create non-existent people to go and vote. You know, so and you have similar stories in many other countries that used to have rules similar to what we have in the United States. People don't appreciate the history of voting regulations and vote fraud in the United States. We had we didn't have secret ballots until relatively late in our country. The first state to adopt secret ballots was Kentucky in 1880. The last state to adopt secret ballots was South Carolina in 1950. And the main reason, the primary reason we moved to secret ballots was to stop vote fraud. What would happen, used to happen is there would be a ballot box up in the front of the room, and people would drop in colored pieces of paper for whatever party they were going to vote for. And the parties would stand on either side of the ballot box, and they would see what colored piece of paper you were putting in there. And then they would pay the voters for voting.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, if they voted for the right party there. And by moving to secret ballots, and by the way, banning things like absentee ballots at the time, they could be sure how you voted. They couldn't be sure how you voted anymore, as they could when you didn't have secret ballots, so they couldn't pay people. And you would see about a 10 percentage point drop in voter turnout in states as soon as they moved to secret ballots, because some people, when they weren't getting paid, just didn't go and vote anymore. And so we have a history of massive vote fraud, you know, not just in Chicago and places like that, but you have a lot of places in this country where you have more people registered to vote than you have people who are voting age living in those areas.
Wow.
A lot of states just refuse to go and clean up the voting rolls that were there. I lived in Nevada for a little while, and they'd send out ballots by mail-in voting. And I got people who were living, four people who had previously lived in the apartment that I was living in at the time. You go through the mail room there, and you'd see ballots all over the floor.
Wow.
I mean, I could have picked up the ballots and mailed them in, and who would have caught me? You know, I didn't do that. I wouldn't do that type of thing. And I don't know who else, whether others would do it. But, you know, you go and pick up 50 ballots from the floor and you mail them in. How are they going to catch you for doing that?
Dr. Lott, we're up against a break. And one question I wanted to ask you when we get back is, because of your knowledge of what you do, when you ran into a situation like that, I'm curious, maybe after the break, did you do something about it? Did you notify the election officials? Did you let them know what was going on? Or did you just go on your merry way and say, hey, I guess they have troubles here? So we're going to come right back. And we have Jeff waiting to talk with you as well when we come back after this. Thanks for joining us on Talk Back on this Monday, March the 30th, and we're privileged to have Dr. John Lott joining us with the Crime Prevention Research Center. And folks have been lining up to talk with you, sir, and I believe Jeff is next. Jeff, go ahead. You're on with Dr. Lott.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment on Harry's comment that it was his opinion that voter fraud is not widespread, and I would suggest to him and anybody else with that thought to use their favorite search engine on the internet and type in last Republican mayor of Chicago and start your journey there.
All right. Thanks for the call. Your thoughts, Dr. Lott?
Well, I mean, I lived in Chicago, and I talked to a number of people who were kind of involved in voting and precinct captains and what have you. And, it's not just a few people who think that dead people vote in Chicago. I think a lot of people kind of openly acknowledge that vote fraud was responsible for Kennedy winning in the 1960 election there, as well as vote fraud in Texas. There's a long history of vote fraud that occurs in the United States. So the notion that somehow it doesn't occur, is just not serious.
Well, not only that, but there has to be a sincere desire in a place where that kind of action is happening, that the populace has to rise up and say, we need to stop this. Or do they simply not have the power?
Right. Well, I mean, I guess there's an incentive for people who benefit from the fraud to keep on it going the way it is. You know, the interesting thing, that I mentioned this earlier, is in other countries, across the political spectrum, people agree that you need to have these anti-fraud type positions. In Mexico, since 1991, you've had many different political parties in power there, and yet none of them have tried to undo, you know, the voter ID or banning absentee ballots for people within Mexico. You have, you know, whether it be England or Ireland or, you know, Scandinavian countries or France or whatever, you know, you just see a political agreement across the board. And one of the interesting things to me, there's a survey that I've been looking at a number of surveys about American views on this. And the people who are most against voter IDs are basically people with graduate educations and people who make over $200,000 a year.
Wow.
The people who are most supportive of it are people with less than high school or high school education. You know, the thing is, and if you look by race, it's something like about 84% of Hispanics, 76% of blacks do this. So the irony is, the people who the concern is are going to be disenfranchised, the ones who have the least education, the lowest incomes, minorities, overwhelmingly support government-issued photo IDs and proof of citizenship to be able to go and vote. The ones who think that these people are going to be disenfranchised are the extremely educated, wealthy people, the ones who surely aren't going to be affected by this.
Amazing. Let's try to get another call in before we take a break. Sandy's been waiting. Sandy, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott. Go ahead.
Good morning, and thanks for coming on. My question is regarding the Missoula County ballots. If you vote absentee like I do, then when you return your envelope, it has your name on the outside of it, so the mailman or anyone can see who it is. I always hand in my ballot in person, not only because it saves a taxpayer dollars, but people know who I am, and I'm very outspoken, a Republican. So there's always that thought in the back of my mind that if a mailman saw that it was me and probably assumes who I'm going to vote for, they can discard my ballot or do whatever they want with it without it actually getting to the ballot return place. So my question is, what are your thoughts on having voters' names on the outside of ballots for absentee ballots? Thank you.
Right. Well, in past elections, there's been accusations that mailmen have, you know, thrown away ballots that have been put in. There have been accusations that there have been, you know, that some mailmen have targeted ballots from the military overseas, you know, maybe because they think that they're going to be more conservative on average than your average voter. And you just have mistakes that occur, even if it's not politically motivated, you know, in terms of the mail. So, you know, I can understand why somebody would take it in. I think, you know, again, the interesting thing is just what an outlier we are in terms of absentee voting. The vast majority of countries around the world do not allow absentee voting for people who live in their countries. And they don't, even the ones that do allow, usually don't send out the absentee ballots in the mail. You have to go in person with the government-issued photo ID to be able to pick up the ballot, because they want to make sure that the person who's supposed to be voting that ballot is the one who gets it. So, you know, the types of rules that we have here in the United States where you don't have to prove that you have a good reason for getting an absentee ballot. You know, they'll just send it to you in the mail. You know, and the fraud occurs on both ends. You have people who will go and, you know, there's been a number of cases involving politicians on both sides of the political fence where people will know when absentee ballots are likely to be sent out and actually go to mailboxes to go and check to see if they can pull out the absentee ballots that are there for people and then go and vote them. There's a case in North Carolina a few years ago where somebody literally got many hundreds of absentee ballots like that and filled them out for the people and sent them in.
Wow. We're up against the break. We're going to come right back. We have an app question. We have Alan and Dave and more phone calls coming in for you, Dr. Lott. So thank you for sharing your expertise with us. This is a very good topic because it's an election year and we want to make sure that our vote counts and that we do it correctly and that we honor that tradition. So we're going to come right back after this. Welcome back, everybody. Talk Back, we're rolling right along this morning. Our special guest on the phone is Dr. John Lott with the Crime Prevention Research Center. And folks have been waiting quite a while, so we do have an app question. Nick, please, go ahead.
Yeah, Chad said, hi, Dr. Lott. A Second Amendment question. I just moved to Florida from Montana 2 months ago. House is sold. I'm all gone. I'm not yet a Florida resident, which means I can't buy a handgun here, and I'm no longer a Montana resident. He said, I can't go back to Montana to buy a handgun. I'd have to lie on my 4473 about my address. It seems I can legally buy a handgun anywhere. I'm in two-way purgatory. Do you know if this kind of situation has ever been litigated? And if so, what was the outcome?
Wow.
Federal law that basically requires that you have to be able to buy it in your own state. It should be pretty easy to quickly, you know, get a driver's license in Florida and have proof of residency there. It shouldn't be something that should take any time to do that. As soon as he can go and get a driver's license there, he should be all set.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you for the text.
I'm flattered to know that he's listening to us from Florida.
You bet. All right. Let's move on and get Alan on the line. Alan, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, Dr. Lott. It's great to talk to you.
Good morning.
Two things. One, I would encourage local Missoula residents go to class to become a poll judge. I did that. I am going to be a poll judge. But you learn a lot about the election process. But the other reason why I'm calling is getting back to guns. And in this March edition of Guns and Ammo, they talk about doozies. And it's how ignorant our legislatures are in the nation. And I use this information to educate people. I'm going to cite two examples. One, the late Representative Karen McCarthy, Democrat, New York, she said, quote, when she was asked to define a barrel shroud, and she told then host Tucker Carlson, she replied, it's a shoulder thing that goes up, unquote. And the other one that I use to educate people, and I'd like to know if there's a list of some of these quotes somewhere. When I talk to
people, I haven't collected those. But look, I actually debated her, I think, a couple times. You know, you look at a lot of these laws that get passed, and, you know, it's Thanks pretty all. Clear that they don't know anything about guns. You know, and when the original assault weapons ban got passed, for example, Senator Feinstein had her staff go through catalogs of guns to go and pick out what guns to list there in the assault weapons ban based on how they looked. If the gun looked scary, you know, they put it on the list. Even though it functioned, fired the same bullets with the same rapidity, doing exactly the same damage, you know, as some other gun that they didn't think looked as scary. You know, so it's just, you know, you look at a lot of these laws and, you know, and just terminology, you know, people talk about silencers on guns. And I've talked to gun control people who honestly believe that, you know, that makes it so it's completely silenced. I guess they've been watching too many James Bond movies or something, you know, because the term that's usually used is suppressor, and it basically will reduce the sound of a gun to, you know, like that of a being, you know, within 3 feet of a jackhammer. So it's not, you know, it's hardly silent. But, you know, unfortunately, that's the people who are in favor of these laws don't own guns, have probably never gone shooting, don't know the differences between different types of guns. And, you know, and that includes a lot of the media, too. I can't tell you the number of times, because obviously I study things like mass public shootings and stuff, where the media will go and say an automatic weapon was used, or just called just about anything an assault weapon or whatever. You know, or talk about military weapons. You know, they have no clue what's going on with these things. So but the point that you're making is a general point.
Okay. Well, hey, thank you, and keep up the good work.
Alan, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Thank We're going to take a quick break. We have Larry, Dave, and Jeff all waiting to visit with you, sir. And, again, Dr. Lott will be with us till 10 o'clock this morning. A couple phone lines are still open, 721-1290. We'll be right back. We're back on Talk Back. Our special guest, Dr. John Lott with the Crime Prevention Research Center. Folks are lined up to talk with you, sir. Let's get to it. Larry, I believe, is next. Larry, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott.
Good morning, Dr. Lott. Thanks for being on the show again. I subscribe to a group called Judicial Watch, and one of their major focuses is voter integrity in our elections. And they file Freedom of Information Acts with these states and that have voter rolls that have not complied with the National Voting Rights Act. And over the over the last few years, they have been very successful in getting these states to comply with that. And as a result, they've removed between 5 and 6 million people from the voter rolls that were no longer supposed to be on there. And each one of those voters may not have voted illegally, but we have certainly cut down the potential for voter irregularities by removing these people as required by federal law. And I just wondered if you would like to comment on that.
Thank you for the call, sir.
Right. Well, as I mentioned earlier, and I appreciate your comment, and thanks. You know, you have places in this country where you have more people registered to vote than you have, you know, voting age people living in those areas. The Trump administration has been really trying to do serious work on this. Unfortunately, a number of these Democratic states are refusing to turn, even though they're mandated under federal law, to turn over their voter registration lists. And they're fighting it in court and trying to delay it as much as possible. But, you know, the problem that you face is that if you have more people registered, you know, dead people or people who just don't exist registered to vote, then, you know, you can have people use those registrations to go and vote. The Trump administration also wants to go and check to see the citizenship status of these individuals. You know, the thing is, we had Harry call earlier saying that there wasn't fraud that was occurring. It would seem like this would be a pretty easy thing for Democrats to go and do to help make their case, if they want to, that fraud isn't a serious issue. But if you have people that shouldn't be on the list, but are, their registrations are still being used to vote, that seems like that should be something that concerns people. And if illegals are voting, You know, they discovered literally thousands of illegals that were voting in Texas, even though they had been checking the voter rolls before that. They still discovered thousands had gotten through. You know, I see things like we had somebody earlier asking about being able to buy a gun. I came across a news story a little while ago where there was an illegal alien in Ohio who had literally bought through licensed dealers something like 145 guns. We just don't do a very good job of checking the legal status, whether somebody's an American citizen or legally in the United States, for even something like whether they can go and purchase guns, let alone checking to see whether or not they're legally able to register to vote.
All right, let's get Walt on the line. He's got a question for you. Walt, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott. Go ahead.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for being on, Dr. Lott. Anyway,
my question. Thank Peter and Nick for having me on.
Oh, okay. A question regarding illegal voting. It seems the O'Keefe Media Group released a video of homeless in L.A.'s Skid Row, where they're being the signature gathers on petition and voter registration are getting paid $7 to $10 a name, and they're making up to $1,000 a day. But these fraudulent ballots are voting registration on the homeless. You know, for example, they'll list, well, what's your address? Well, Pinocchio Lane, or don't even answer it, or just, you know, use a fake address. So when somebody says that, well, the voting fraud is not material, I don't think we really know how much fraud is out there. Do you have any idea how bad it is?
Good question. Thanks, Walt.
Thank you.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, I've published a lot of peer-reviewed academic research on this stuff. And I can tell you historically, when we went to secret ballots, when people weren't getting paid anymore for doing that, you saw about a 10 percentage point drop in voter turnout when people weren't being paid. You know, some people didn't want to go and vote when they weren't getting paid anymore for voting. So that's the type of stuff. The big problem that you have with identifying vote fraud is that people being paid to vote, both the vote buyer and the vote seller have an incentive to hide the transaction because they're both benefiting from it. Or if I'm just voting because, you know, it's a political cause, and you have, you know, every once in a while, there is a case in Pennsylvania where this woman was caught. She was actually living in New Jersey, but she had voted something like 140 times in one Pennsylvania election. You know, it's hard to find that. When I was at Wharton, the Wharton Business School, I had a monthly column that I wrote for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And they had me in one time to go and meet with the editorial board. And the funny thing was, all these newspaper guys openly talked about how the Democrats would go and have buses that would take people from one polling place to another that was there. You know, obviously they kind of agreed with all that. They weren't going to run news stories about it happening. But, you know, when you look at Europe, the case I was talking about before with France, basically you just found it because you had some people who had guilty consciences because they saw literally hundreds of thousands of illegal votes being cast in elections. You know, after the statute of limitations for charging people with crimes had elapsed for Ireland, you had people with the IRA going and basically telling people, you know, in the media and academics, yeah, you know, we had these whole fleet of cabs going around.
Wow.
You know, it just, we see the need to have IDs, as I mentioned before, even to check into a hotel, okay? Because presumably we're concerned about people not being honest with regard to that. And yet something where obviously, I mean, look at the amount of money that gets spent on elections. We had something like $1.5 billion spent by Kamala Harris's
right.
campaign. If you're going to spend that much money, and, you know, surely people have heard of stories of walking around money and stuff like that in New Jersey and Pennsylvania and places, other places. If you're going to be spending that much per vote, why not pay some people to go and vote and the thing is, things like absentee ballots and vote harvesting, you know, one of the reasons when we moved to a secret ballot, states did not allow absentee ballots at that time was because they were worried that you would just have vote buying for absentee ballots, because I could show you how I voted.
Wow.
And then if you had, on top of that, if you have ballot harvesting where you could go and give the ballot to somebody else to turn in for you, then the person who's paying for it can not only verify how you're voting, but know that the vote is going to be turned in. And so they're willing to pay much more for that than they are, in a situation where, you just tell them how you voted. Obviously, they're not willing to do that with the pure secret ballot.
With that, we're up against the break. We're going to come right back. Dave, Jeff, Tim, and Charlie are all still waiting. We're trying to get as many calls in as we can for Dr. Lott in the remaining time we have. We'll be back right after this.
As the days start.
Welcome back to Talk Back. Our special guest this morning, Dr. John Lott of the Crime Prevention Research Center. Charlie's been waiting the longest. Charlie, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning. Hey, I was watching a video the other day of the Minnesota legislature. They were having some sort of committee meeting. They were questioning the election commissioner
right.
about the process. And apparently, in Minnesota, illegals can get a driver's license. So that right. illegal alien can go to a polling place with his driver's license, sign a piece of paper that says he is, in fact, a U.S. citizen, and he can vote that day as well. But he can vouch for up to 8 other people
wow.
of them being citizens, and they can vote that day. So I guess my question or my wondering is, how can there ever be a free and fair election in Minnesota? Or I don't know, maybe California is the same way. I think they offer illegals driver's licenses as well. But I just found that's ripe for fraud right there. I mean, I can't believe that could even pass. But the other part of my question or comment is the U.S. Constitution, don't they give the states the authority to set their own election laws? So I'm wondering how that would flesh out with the SAVE Act. If it's just federal elections that you have to prove your citizenship, or is it, is where I'm coming from there?
Right. Well, it does deal with just federal elections. But there are things that the federal government can do to kind of create incentives also for changing rules. You can go and say, look, you get so much money from the federal government. We're going to make, whether we give you some money conditional on whether you adopt certain types of laws. I mean, they do that for all sorts of things,
Oh, yeah, they did it for the highway
influence or whatever.
Yeah, the highway speed limit back in the day.
They can do that also. Now, there's a recent Supreme Court decision that kind of limits the size of kind of the financial incentive that's there that you can make for it. But you can still have those incentives there for sure.
All righty.
Thank you for the call, sir. We appreciate it. All right, that means Dave is up next. Dave, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. As I understand the system,
when I sign my mail-in ballot, send it in, my signature is compared to my signature that I have registered in the past to and is on record. And if that signature is different enough to cause a question mark, the vote is put to the side, and I get a letter from the government telling me my signature has been, my ballot has been questioned, and to contact them. Now, I mean, if you're running off and signing all these absentee ballots that's laying around on the ground, you're going to have to sign them pretty close to the original, or they're going to be thrown out anyway.
Okay. As far as, well, first of all, during the 2020 election, for all practical purposes, a lot of states, simply because they were dealing with so many mail-in ballots, did not check the signatures that were there. If you look at the rate that they would disqualify signatures compared to previous elections, you know, usually you'd be talking about a disqualification rate of like 2% or so. You're talking about hundredths of one percentage point that were being disqualified. In some places, it was effectively zero that they had, that they were disqualified. So, you know, and also some states, you have to understand when they check it, they basically, some states use a computer system to go and check it, but it's not really matching it up in the way that you're thinking. It's just they have basically what they call a three-point system there just to see, does it increase and decrease? And, you know, the people who do that are more than happy to tell you, and I've talked to them, that there's huge error rates in terms of whether or not, you know, if you look at it yourself as opposed to using that system, you would see signatures don't match that get approved by the system there. So, you know, I don't think, particularly during the 2020 election, it did not work the way you're thinking.
Okay, thanks for the call. We're going to take a one-minute timeout. When we return, we'll get Jeff and Tim on, and I want to say thank you again to Dr. John Lott for sharing this 90 minutes with us. We're going to come right back after this. Hey, we are back on Talk Back, a final segment with Dr. John Lott with the Crime Prevention Research Center. And Jeff has been waiting. So, Jeff, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott. Go ahead.
Dr. Lott, good to talk with you again.
Thank you.
My favorite news source, the Babylon Bee, recently had an article that said Democrats push for death certificate as a form of voter ID. And in Texas, it was a tradition that dead people would vote. I mean, it's a time-honored tradition.
Well, so, people read, what is it, the Ascent Caro's book on Lyndon Johnson and how he got the name Landslide Lyndon, about all the massive vote fraud that was occurring there. You know, you'd wait until the other side's precincts had been turned in, and then you turn yours in, you know, when you realized how many votes you had to make up there.
Yeah, you don't vote until you know how many you need.
Yeah, his books.
Oh, it's more efficient that way.
Yeah. The one example of Minnesota is very prime, but so is Oregon. Just recently in January, I believe, that the Department of Justice forced Oregon to remove 800,000, not 800, but 800,000 inactive voters from their rolls. And that left about 3.2, I guess. But, yeah, a huge, huge number.
Right. Well, I mean, that is prime for vote fraud. You know, the thing is, in Oregon, they have mail-in voting. So you have the ballots going out there. And, you know, if you have non-existent people who are registered to vote and somebody's getting those ballots, you know, you have a lot of votes that shouldn't be voted there.
Yeah. But earlier in the show, you mentioned about anti-Semitism and attacks on synagogues and Jewish people and that sort of thing. But I was listening over to a podcast over the weekend, and there's a disturbing rise on the, what I call the woke right. Some folks call it Christian nationalism, but it's to blame Israel for everything, for all the problems in our country, again, the rise of anti-Semitism. In particular, that Donald Trump is just a pawn of the Jews, and that he wouldn't have gone in and bought Iraq or Iran if it wasn't for Bibi Netanyahu coercing him.
Right. Well, I mean, you have a few people like Joe Kent and I guess maybe Tucker Carlson and a few people like that, which kind of stoke those things. But I think, you know, you just look at the demonstrations and I think it's overwhelmingly a problem on the other side of the fence. But, you know, it's disturbing to see it any place. And, you know, it's something that needs to be called out.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I just worry about the folks on the right falling prey to this idea that somehow we're being manipulated by the dreaded Jews. And
right. Well, I mean, it's a disturbing thing for people any place to be to believe that type of craziness. But you point it out when you see it.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's try to get one more call in. Tim has been waiting quite a while. Tim, go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning, Dr. Lott. My name is Colonel Tim Garvey. And I'd like to change subjects here. A few weeks ago, after the invasion of Iran, there was an attack at Old Dominion University, the Virginia ROTC, PMS, which is Professor of Military Science.
We only have about 3 minutes left, Tim, so please quickly.
Yeah, he was shot and killed. And what I'm asking about is, see, the students, instead of running away, they attacked him, and they rendered him unalive, as words of the FBI. Have you heard anything more about the this attack at Old Dominion?
Well, I mean, I know the guy yelled Allah Akbar when he did it. I know the students had, one of them had a knife with them, which I guess was against the school rules for him to be able to go and carry. So, you know, I'm not sure what more you want to know about it, but obviously, the fact that the guy yelled that out to begin with gives you some good idea of what his motivations were. And we had a number of those attacks in the first half of March. You know, the same day you had that attack at Temple Israel in Michigan. You had the attack in Austin, Texas that occurred shortly before that earlier in March. So, I mean, there are like four of these attacks in the United States just in the first couple of weeks of the month.
Well, John, we're almost out of time. Real quickly, where can we find your work?
At our website at crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org. And as usual, you know, people can sign up for our emails. We send out an email once every 2 weeks. And they'll get my email address and, you know, they can send me questions.
Sounds good. Dr. Lott, it's always a pleasure to visit with you. Thank you for spending time with us and answering all our questions today. We appreciate it, sir.
Well, thanks for being there and thanks for having me on.
You bet. Look forward to our next visit as well. All right. So, Mr. Nick, as we are done with the Monday show, we got to look forward to Tuesday, sir. What's coming up?
Yeah, we'll have a forestry specialist, Dr. Peter Kolb, and then hopefully Cindy Perrin will be able to join him as well from 8 to 10.
Sounds good, yeah. Always a fountain of information, both of those individuals. And I know personally, I learn a lot whenever they're standing over there in that part of the studio. I just try to keep my mouth shut and try to absorb as much as I can from people who are very, very intelligent and very good at what they do. And the same thing is good for Dr. Lott and all of you folks. And thank you so much for calling in. You guys really hit it out of the park with the number of calls today. Thank you very, very much for doing that. We appreciate it. That's what TalkBack is all about, and you're making it so. So, on behalf of Nick Christensen, I want to say thank you for joining us, and we look forward to tomorrow's visit again. We'll be visiting with our friend Peter Kolb, and we hope that you will get your questions together and get ready to have a conversation with him. So, thanks for joining us. Have a great day, everybody. And get out and enjoy the day. If you like clouds, this is your day today. So till tomorrow, have a great day, everybody.